The following talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi during a Fusatsu ceremony at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Sitting in the threshold of this year, departing, and a new year arriving, I think of the one unchanging principle, which is change. Nagarjuna said, "Life flickers in the flurries of a thousand ills, more fragile than a bubble in a stream. In sleep, each breath departs and is again drawn in. How wondrous that we wake, living still." Shanti Davis said, "All that I possess and use is like the fleeting vision of a dream. It fades into the realms of memory and fading will never be seen again. Samsara too seems to be unchanging. Every generation, here it is. In each place and every time, there are people who are giving life, and there are people who are taking it away. There are those with much power who are using it to bring about benefit to others, and others who are using it for their own gain. There are challenges, small and large, near and far. It seems that this has always been true. It seems more true now, somehow. The Buddha said, whatever is born is impermanent and is bound to pass. Whatever is stored up is bound to run out. Whatever comes together is bound to come apart. Whatever is built up is bound to come down. Friends and enemies, fortune and sorrow, good and evil. Every thought in your mind is always changing. And so we are both fed, and we see many signs of distress in our world that arise from and elicit within us fear and grave concern, grief, anger. We may feel like we are on the direct path of that. We may be aware of others who are in the direct path of that. And so amidst all of this bad news, is there any good news? Around this time of year, there are often stories of acts of kindness. When I was meeting with folks who were doing the One Continuous Thread this week, one of the students talked about some acts of kindness that she unexpectedly experienced and said, there is still kindness in the world. And I said, let us never doubt that for a moment. And those stories are uplifting and encouraging, and they also come and go briefly, quickly. So what is the good news on the Buddha's path? All conditioned things are dukkha, and we can understand this. We can study this, examine it, begin to gain understanding. Dukkha arises from our clinging desires. We can practice letting go, relinquishing our attachments, becoming free of them. We are not bound by them. We are not defined by them. We are not controlled by them. Desires grasping every apparent obstacle in and of itself has no power to bind us, to inflict something upon us, and we can realize that. We can make that real in our own lives. There is a path, a noble path, that has come down to us, been transmitted through people, through people's experiences, their teachings, their guidance. We can practice that every day in any situation, in every situation, we can walk this path. And we can dedicate ourselves to a life without regret. We can bring forth all of these wonderful qualities that we possess, that Buddhism recognizes, teaches, emphasizes, fearlessness. We can give fearlessness. We can cultivate faith. We can generate patience. We can build stamina and resilience within ourselves. We can be kind. We can be kind. And so let's consider these things for a moment. This good news. Can you recall a time in your life before you discovered the Dharma? Before you knew there was a path or were practicing it? Before you were meditating? Before you were sitting with a Sangha? What was going on? What was going on in that life of yours? Maybe there were fires burning. Maybe there were a few fires. Maybe your life was fine and good. And was there something deep within, a dis-ease, a discontent, a tension, something that wasn't settled, a restlessness? And what did you do with that? What did you see other people doing with that? In other words, what examples did you observe, helpful and unhelpful? Distract, ignore, sedate, rationalize, avoid, blame. We're surrounded by books and speakers and experts and opinions and possibilities, many designated to make us feel better. Who doesn't want to feel better? Who doesn't want to feel better? But do those things speak to that is within? Does it touch? Some do, to some degree. That discomfort that we experience is a sign of life, that irritant, that whatever you call it, whatever it is that won't go away, is a sign of life. It's a calling. It's calling you in. It's like being out at sea on a foggy night and hearing a horn, a foghorn, calling you into safe harbor to be free. The Buddha said we have to first become acquainted with all of those things we don't want to become acquainted with. We have to learn to face and hold and realize we can. Those things that we have, in many instances, not held or held well. And so we turn and we face, we sit, we stop, we see, we observe, we listen. And we begin to understand that that within us is somehow inextricably linked, not only to our own well-being and happiness, but to everyone. We can atone. We can forgive. We can take responsibility. We can take vows. We can renew those vows. We can forgive even when the person who has hurt us is not asking for forgiveness. We can forgive when they're not even in our presence, when they're not even alive. We can do that. More good news. We don't have to carry those old weights that have so molded themselves to the shape of our bodies and our minds. We don't have to do that. We can also stand underneath a great expansive sky and look out. Look up. We can look out across a boundless sea that has no edge. We can also feel our own fleeting smallness. Padmasambhava said, my mind is as vast as the sky, but my attention to my actions is as fine as flour. We can do that. We can live in that. I mentioned earlier that I've been reflecting a lot on just thinking about Dada Roshi. It's been coming to my mind. And I was thinking about, because we're working on collecting these stories from some of the early folks who were here that were really crucial, really essential to helping this place to happen. And I was thinking about just, I mean, as I often have, about just the enormity of the project that there was at that time. I mean, just imagine you walk into this building, this property. It has not been taken care of for a while. It's leaking. The roof is leaking. There's no heat. Windows are broken. It's a mess. You have a couple of people with you. You have a few bucks in your wallet, and you decide to build a seamless temple, a monastery. And so I've often thought about, you know, paying the bills with little money or taking care of the buildings, just all of the everyday things that had to happen that were demanding attention, and to do that with so few resources. But I was thinking more about building a monastery with a group of people, all but one or two, really knew nothing about Buddhism, about training, about any of this. How do you do that? How is that done from the beginning? Putting it together. Having a vision, getting people interested, excited, enthusiastic, faith, patience, perseverance, and above all, a deep love for the Dharma, an untiring love for the Dharma, and faith in the power, because love enough is alone is not enough. There has to be faith that the Dharma is good. And it is good for those for whom the Dharma is good. Because it's not necessarily good for everybody. It could be, but that's up to the individual. A deep love for the Dharma and a deep conviction based in Dada Roshi's own experience that the Dharma is good, as the Buddha said, in the beginning, in the middle, and the end. More good news. You have Buddha nature. I mean, that's just a celebration in and of itself. You are listening to my words, I hope, with Buddha mind. With Buddha mind. You can sit in the posture of the Buddha that has come down to us, that was given to you lovingly, with great care, so that you could sit on this diamond seat as a Buddha and see into your mind just as all of those before us have done. You can be in the face of strong emotions, strong desires, and get to know them in a way that is profound and transformative. How good is that? You can feel the impulse to take a life an infirm life instead. You can feel the impulse to take something that doesn't belong to you. And remember what is important and turn that around into generosity. You can use words, or you can feel the impulse to use words that are untrue and stop and reflect on that and speak clearly. You can cloud your bright, clear awareness and then turn back towards clarity. You can be insensitive with sexuality, sexual desire and energy, caring, and transform that into caring more about someone else, respect and dignity. You can want to hurt somebody with critical words and instead offer kindness. You can want to be better, higher, to dominate somebody else and put them down in a lower position and instead be humble and actually ask, how can I serve you? How can I help? You can feel anger arise and no longer be afraid of it, no longer be at the mercy of it, understand it and transform it into a very powerful form of compassion. You can want more and more still and see that that isn't bringing you closer and begin to turn towards simplicity and begin to experience the profound depth and breadth and riches of that. You can feel inclined to blame the Buddha, your teacher, the Dharma, the Sangha, for your pain, for your discouragement, and instead you can take refuge. You can take refuge every day, throughout the day. How good is that? You can face what is unbearable and think, I don't know how to face this. And then find out that you can. You are. And you can do that with patience, forbearance. You can hold the pain, the discomfort that you feel, and be intimate with it without loving it, without hating it, and see how that makes you large and spacious and pliant. You can hold another's pain when they seem to not be able to be in the presence of their pain and not be able to take it away from them, because you can't, and stay there and offer compassion, kindness, loving words. You can do what you can without creating unnecessary worry. How good is that? You can understand more and more what you cannot do without creating unnecessary worry. And at any point, on any day, in any situation, you can offer in your mind any form of medicine for any kind of illness for any person in the world. You can do that. You can have faith in yourself. You can just be a person, a true person. You can just be a true person. So much good news. It's hard to hold it all. You know, we probably all experience the desire at certain moments, certainly to just want to fix the problem, whatever that might be, whether it's you, yourself, or somebody else, or something. We probably all experience a moment where we just want somebody to tell us what to do. Just tell me what to do. wanted somebody to take our confusion away, our pain, to make us feel better, even though it won't actually perhaps help us in that moment. And Buddhism doesn't do that. It doesn't do what it cannot do. And it doesn't worry about that. Of course, it's not a thing to worry. But if it could, it wouldn't. Because the wisdom of the Buddha Dharma understands, in a sense, what the wisdom of Buddha Dharma can do and what it cannot do. I often have the image of being led by a good guide to the edge of a woodland or a vast desert or an open sea. And as we move forward, they stop because we have to go. We now have to walk, paddle, move ourselves. But with all of this good news, transformed into practice, transformed into experience, transformed into what you can do, and more who you are, truly, that true person, no longer in need of rank, although you can use rank if you need to, if that would be helpful. And then you can address what needs to be addressed. You can encounter the moments of your day, situations, new and old. You can stand in the face of something that you've not experienced before, that has landed in your lap. You are the one who needs to respond, and you can find a way. You can take refuge. You can turn back and study the precepts. You can examine, what do you know? What have you learned? You can talk to your teacher. As we finish tonight, we will sit and sit into midnight and do Daikaijo, Daikaijo with a little extra Dai release to bring in the new year, and then we will do a service, Chanta, Metta Sutta, and really absorbing that within our bones. This is what should be done. This is what should be done for those who are practicing goodness, wisdom, compassion. And then as we each have the opportunity to offer incense, to make a vow, we make vows because amidst all of these teachings and these practices, the skillful means, the Sangha, so much to draw from. I hope that is not lost on any of us. That in the midst of all of this, it still and always comes down to each of us. How I am living, the choices I am making, the thoughts I am generating, the words I am speaking, the actions I take. That's the world that I create in my mind, and that's my contribution to the world. Not making a contribution is not an option. No one can be in this world and not contribute something. We cannot not have an effect. It's impossible. And so, of course, that brings the question right up, what is the contribution I'm making? Is it worthy of this life that I've been given this body and mind, the power of my ability to think, to speak, to act, to care, to practice. Is it worthy of, equal to, maybe I should say, of all the gifts I've received? And some of those gifts, in fact, sometimes some of the most important gifts, were different forms of problems that were brought to me or inflicted upon me. Because I imagine we all know by now, that's often when we learn the most, is when we face adversity. And so we take vows because I need to remember. First, I need to know what is important. We need to know what is important in order that my contribution, what I can give, my giving, my offering, is equal to my endowment, your endowment, the stuff you're made of. And so we make these vows. I make this vow so that I do not forget. A vow is that which we must not forget. And that's why we renew them. That's why we take them every day. That's why the first moment we walk into this place of training, we encounter them. Long before we may be ready, if ever, to take them. And so to reflect on this, this time, this world, what do you need to remember? And just to make it a little bit more manageable, this year. Because that's the tradition. Make a vow. You know, I was talking to Hojin Sensei, and she was saying, I can't remember what it was, but a whole bunch of new people showed up at the temple. New Year's Day is always a bumper day at the temple. Right? All those New Year's and good intentions. And they're good. I mean, it's good that people do that. It's a good tradition. And what happens to those good intentions? They don't have a life of their own. Really, it's the gift to us, in a sense, from us, by us, that the Dharma does not fix it, does not tell us what to do. It just opens everything wide so that we can look in and see, oh, this is what's been happening since the beginning. This is how things work. This is what actually is. Oh, this is what happens when I live within a daydream and think it's real. This is what happens when I bring forth a positive thought or good intention, or I care about something very deeply that is good, and I cling to it, and it becomes righteous, and it becomes a weapon. That we can be so strongly, adamantly encouraged to be courageous and have a great vow, have a great aspiration, knowing that we will almost certainly get tangled up in that. We will cling to it, we will become attached, and when we become attached, we will become discouraged. And in that unfolding, we free ourselves. We discover how to care so much freely so that we can keep caring so much and more. You know, when I think about Dogen, for example, after training for years and years, got on a ship and went to China. Got really sick en route. Got to China, ran into all kinds of obstacles and bureaucracies and disappointments at different monasteries, not finding what he felt like was true Dharma, true teacher. Having traveled so far, gone through so much, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. It's made so easy for us in so many ways. And there's a gift in that for sure. And there's something else too. But to arrive by ease or trouble, once we've arrived, it's pretty much the same. That does not seem to have changed much over all of these centuries. Human consciousness is the same pickle now that it was in the time of the Buddha. We tie ourselves up in the same knots. We create variations on a theme of samsara. And we don't have to. The best news ever. So, maybe with our New Year's vow, we can infuse that with gratitude, a sense of appreciation, a sort of visceral, heartfelt awareness. You know, to be confused or struggling within the Dharma versus being confused and struggling without a clue, it's not the same, not by a long shot. So, let's let Shantideva have the last word here. Never halting night or day, my life is slipping by. Thus, from this day forth, I go for refuge to Buddhas, those guardians of wandering beings who labor, who work so hard for the good of everything that lives, of everything that wants life, everything that loves life. Those mighty ones who help to disperse all of our fears. I take refuge in the Dharma that resides within their hearts, yours too, that disperses all the terrors of samsara, that allows us to face all of our troublemaking in kindness and compassion, sometimes in ferocity, but always to create no more harm. And I take refuge in the multitude of bodhisattvas, the multitude of bodhisattvas, Buddhist, non-Buddhist, two-legged, other-legged. I will perfectly take refuge. This we can do.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.